since 1976, the game has been rigged to the rich. So we see it really starting during the Carter administration. And you might suggest, or you did suggest, that 1964, with Kennedy's tax cuts, we began to see a change from the New Deal ethos.
I like to say that the Kennedy tax cuts were a pre-abdication to trickle down. Right. Before trickle down had even been coined.
Exactly.
Though it was, I mean, we heard the same arguments in the progressive era mm-hmm. with the very same fights. Teddy Roosevelt was having the very same fights. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And yeah. And there was a different ethos back then with, who was it, the Dimes? I'm trying to think of the name of the dime. The guy was giving away the dimes, the rich guy.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, Beck. Well, anyway, let's look at Carnegie. Let's look at, Carnegie Libraries.
Rockefeller.
Rockefeller was the name I was trying to think of. The Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the robber barons.
Yeah.
Back then, they knew that if they didn't give it away somehow, their souls were going to rot in hell. That ethos is gone. And not only is that ethos gone by and large, but what's happening now is a system, and this is your thesis, that the rich people hoarding the wealth is strangling the whole economic situation, except for the richest of the rich.
Yeah, now this is interesting because it's a thing that economists, I think, just don't perceive. You've got this $100 trillion in wealth. And if let's say 20% of it gets spent a year, you got $20 trillion in GDP. And so producers produce $20 trillion worth of stuff. Because as a producer, I'm here to tell you that producers produce stuff for one and only one reason. Because people are spending on and buying it. So it's, you know, the economy is always and everywhere demand driven. At least from my perspective as a producer and entrepreneur. There's no other reason I produce stuff.
So the rich holding on to all the wealth is strangling any kind of multiplier effect or any serious right. multiplier effect we might have if there were more of that money circulating.
Yeah, and I don't even like to use that word multiplier effects because it sort of confuses income with wealth. I prefer to just talk about the velocity of wealth. And I think it's easy to understand and fairly simple arithmetic, and in the article that brought you here to talk to me, I pulled a little table. I've been meaning to do this for years, finally did it. Bottom line is the bottom 60% of people, and this is as a group, don't think individuals, this is a group, the bottom 60% turn over 40 or 50% of their wealth a year in spending, driving production.
Buying milk and paying rent, basically.
Yeah, well, you know, or buying, I don't know, buying boats for their family vacation. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I want people to have that kind of basic, comfortable life, be able to take their family on vacation once a year, yeah. once every 2 years. Sure. That seems like we have plenty for that to be true for pretty much every American. The bottom 60% turns over about 40 or 50% of their wealth a year. The top 20% turns over 5% of their wealth a year. So they're quite literally sitting there on a hoard of money and turning it over very slowly. It's important to say turnover. It's not just when they spend it, it doesn't go away. It gets turned, one person spending is another person's income. It's all this wealth turnover is a circular thing. Wealth also grows over time, but there's through a couple of various effects, but I'm not going to talk about that at this instant.
Other than the huge, you know, tax breaks to the uber rich, and, you know, we know in the Reagan era, the decimation of unions, starting with the decertification of the air traffic controllers, the PATCO union. These were some of the things that began to happen. What are some of the other things that have happened in this neoliberal era that have just made it horrible for working people?
It's a whole panoply of things. If you go back to the 70s and the famous Powell memo, Lewis Powell, who Supreme Court Justice, wrote a memo to basically the captains of industry saying, people are trying to destroy capitalism, we need to get together and fight back. And it was sort of the founding document of the Koch brothers type effort that has expended hundreds of billions of dollars in propaganda over the decades. So they were so fully aware. They bought grad schools. They built think tanks. They hired armies of lobbyists. So there were many ways that this happened. I mean, I could point to a few things. One of the key ones was a bill that went through in the waning days of the Clinton administration when he was struggling with the whole Monica Lewinsky thing, called the Commodities Futures Modernization Act. And it basically took the shackles off Wall Street and the shadow banks. And it's one of many things. So I think the deregulation of the financial industry to the point that finance delivers maybe 5% of value added to our economy, but extracts 25% of corporate profits is the result of that. So I could run through a long list of things. It's been a full spectrum attack and spectacularly brilliantly executed, spectacularly successful. Yeah. And killing unions, Reagan and the air traffic controllers was just a classic moment, but there are so many of those moments over the decades. Mm-hmm.
The Bernie Sanders campaign seemed to believe that going back to the New Deal era would have made things better. But is that possible? Can we just have a second New Deal, or has the situation changed so much that it's a lot more complicated than that?
There's two questions there. One is economic, the other is political. Economically, hell yes. Why in the hell not? Politically, the essential problem is those decades of propaganda have been so effective that even the left has been ideologically captured.
Hence neoliberalism.
Hence neoliberalism.
Hence Clintonism.
Yeah, the quote, Washington consensus, the austerity campaigns, you can go on and on, yes. So it's, I think maybe the biggest problem is that Democrats abandoned, really in the 60s and 70s, abandoned the full-throated economic progressive populism that won FDR four resounding terms. I mean, one of his campaigns, he lost one state. And for some reason, the Democrats have been, for many decades, unwilling to pick up that torch and wave it. And left-wing economists are maybe the worst. They're so weak-voiced in their... I mean, this assertion I make that concentrated wealth is strangling the economy. You throw that at any left-wing economist and they'll say, well, yes, we really don't have the data to demonstrate that conclusively. And, you know, I think you're being a little you're overstating the case a little. Wah, 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 wah. Right. Meanwhile, the Republicans are absolutely unabashed. The right-wing economists and Republicans are unabashed saying, oh, yeah, we're going to create a million jobs and bring all the jobs back from overseas. Yeah. And they're unabashed about just saying the most outrageous thing, that cutting taxes increases tax revenues. They've been right-wing economists saying that for decades, many of them in the bought and paid for think tanks.
Proven wrong in Kansas.
Proven wrong over and over and over again without remit.
But Kansas especially is a great example of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's just such a beautiful recent example. Small example. Now, I will say you always have to look at long periods and big samples to really draw conclusions from this stuff. Kansas is only one, but it's a very good one.
Elaborate on why it's a good example. Kansas. Brownback.
Oh, Brownback, yeah. I thought you said brown bag.
We're left holding the brown bag in this case.
It's just a good example because it was a very distinct move in time from point X to point B, there's a big cut. And since it's only one example, it's anecdotal, but we do can compare it to Nebraska, Missouri, the states surrounding it, and other similar states, which is a good way to sort of evaluate these kind of things judiciously and sensibly. And it just got its fanny whooped economically. It's just been terrible. By all appearances, it's been terrible for Kansas. And, you know, they're slashing education. And again, and that's another thing, is this kind of wild austerism is incredibly short-sighted short-termism. There is no more valuable payback. I'm a businessman. Payback, ROI, over 10, 20, 30, 40 years than robust investments in education. Think of the GI Bill and what it did for America. Mm-hmm. And to strangle that funding, as the Republicans have been doing here in Washington for years, to the point that they're under $100,000 a day, a week, fine for underfunding education, the legislature is, it's just so contrary to my businessman's approach to building a successful long-term business or country.
Right.